Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 19th of May. It's all things political, and it's a big week in politics with primaries taking place tomorrow in Oregon and also a primary taking place in Kentucky. And our guests just happen to be from both those states. We'll be looking at a number of issues, how the campaigns are being played out in those states, the huge crowd. I mean, huge. I don't know if you saw the pictures, 75,000 people seeing Barack Obama in Portland. We will talk about the, little bit of time on the Democratic wins. I believe there have been three of them now in special elections that are traditionally strong Republican seats, the last one in Mississippi. So we'll talk about that, what that means for the Republicans. Also, President Bush's statements about appeasement and Senator McCain's statements about negotiating with, quote, terrorists were all the talk over the weekend. As how we get these two teams together, the Senator Barack Obama and Senator Hillary Clinton teams together. Evidently, they've been having some meetings over the weekend concerning getting some of their fundraisers together, and a lot of talk about making sure that somebody loyal to Hillary Clinton is in the number two spot on the presidential team to unite the two factions. Well, we got that and so much more to talk about. Should be a good hour. We have two great guests, and we welcome your phone calls as always. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. If you'd like to send an email to us, that is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Joining us from Oregon this morning is Professor Joseph Lowndes, assistant professor in the Department of Political Science, and author of From the New Deal to the New Right, Race and the Southern Origins of Modern Conservatism. Professor Lowndes, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen. It's nice to be here again.
Also joining us is Professor Stephen Voss, who is Associate Professor, Director of Undergraduate Studies at the University of Kentucky. Professor Voss, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Let's start with that crowd in Portland, just because the pictures I'm looking at yesterday and today were so astounding. 75,000 people in what looked like a gorgeous setting to greet Senator Obama. That was huge, Professor Lowndes.
Yeah, extraordinary. It was, you know, by far his biggest campaign crowd, I think, yet, actually. It was an amazing turnout. I think it was very surprising to the Obama people as well that the turnout was that high.
Why was it so high? What was going on?
Well, I think, you know, part of it is that we have, in the rainy Pacific Northwest, we have finally started to get some nice weather, which always helps political campaigns. I think that's part of it. But I think, Obama has a lot of support in Oregon generally, and in Portland and its surrounding counties in particular. So I think there's an enormous amount of enthusiasm for him here, and particularly in Portland.
Mm-hmm. And Professor Voss, Senator Clinton has an enormous lot of support in Kentucky, doesn't she?
Yes, she sure does.
What do you imagine is going to break tomorrow for her? Will it be as big a win as it was in West Virginia?
Well, you know, there is that bandwagon effect, and Obama seems to have the momentum behind him, and Kentucky voters aren't immune to that. But Clinton definitely has much more appeal around here, and I suspect she'll get a pretty strong victory no matter where the final numbers fall.
And the appeal is due to what?
Well, you know, Hillary Clinton, although maybe in her past I wouldn't have said this, now is casting herself as a lunch pail Democrat. She speaks to more of these what they call, you know, red state Democrats, and she's going to be able to pull that large base behind her in Kentucky. You know, Obama's still getting the college professors and all the, you know, the sort of Starbucks liberals, but Hillary Clinton's getting most of the rank-and-file Democratic voters.
Mm-hmm. And what about in the fall election? It does appear as though Obama will be the candidate, Professor Lowndes. Will he be able to pull in those lunch pail Democrats?
I think he has a lot of work to do yet in front of him between now and November to make that happen. You know, he's been criticized for not spending enough time in West Virginia last week, and perhaps we're not spending enough time in Kentucky now to kind of prove the point that he is and can be appealing to white working class voters. I mean, I think it's you know, we should be clear here that, plenty of black Democrats are also working class or lunch pail Democrats. But here, I think the issue is that Clinton has openly appealed to is race. But I think, you know, so it's hard to say. I think he has a lot of work to do. On the other hand, you can't project out, you know, primary statistics onto a general election territory. Mm-hmm. It's a different map.
Mm-hmm. And the general election conversation has really already begun, particularly with the much talk about appeasement, Professor Voss.
Yes, I mean, in terms of foreign policy, there is some appeal here in Kentucky for a more aggressive stance, but I think that's easy to overrate. You know, I think both in the red and the blue states, we're pretty tired of this conflict in Iraq, and there are large numbers of people on both sides of the political aisle who are not happy with how our foreign policy has been conducted. So I really don't, I would be surprised if this appeasement issue ended up to be a major campaign issue in the general election.
Hmm. Do you agree with that, Professor Lanz?
Yeah, I think, as a matter of fact, I think that's why the Obama camp made such an issue of it initially when Bush made those comments in Israel last week, in part because I think that he feels confident, Obama feels confident that he has a case to make here, and he used it as an opportunity. He could have, you know, let it slide in some ways, but I think he saw that there's a way of reframing the debate here that he feels confident in his ability to do, in part, as Professor Voss said, that there's so much growing distaste for the war in Iraq.
Mm-hmm. The two camps over the weekend, the rival camps, were planning to merge fundraising forces to start talking about putting a supporter, a Clinton loyalist, as a running mate to heal the party. This taking place just over the last couple days. Two questions. Do you, from what you've read about these meetings, are they amenable? And do you think that the Obama camp, should he be the nominee, choose a Clinton loyalist, and it would be smart for him to do so as a running mate? Professor Voss?
Oh, I'm sure that ultimately they can work together. The differences in the sort of background teams for these two camps is very small. Where their differences exist, I think, mostly is in the mass behavior and in the regular folks who are supporting them. And the hard thing for Obama is not going to be to get a few Clinton activists behind him to give an image of unity. It's going to be to start positioning himself not way on the left to collect, you know, Democratic activists, but to start positioning himself more in the middle to collect swing voters.
Mm-hmm. Professor Lanz?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, any show of unity they can pull together now is important. Parties that have not been unified going into the nomination and then into the general election have been historically hurt terribly at the polls, and so it does matter a lot that they're able to do that. And I think it's important that Clinton herself, should Obama get the nomination, which it looks like he will, signal to her supporters that she is throwing her strong support behind Obama, not just nominal support. But I think, you know, I don't think it'll be that hard for – the issues are cultural more than actually political. In some ways, Obama is not – he's not a left-winger, you know, and I think that he culturally gets framed this way because of because of the Jeremiah Wright controversy and other things. But, you know, he's mostly a centrist on foreign policy. He doesn't dispute the idea of kind of the U.S. as hegemon in the world. His economic policies are, you know, kind of center-left, but not far liberal. And so I think it's not a matter of policy positions on which Clinton and Obama are quite close down the line. So mm-hmm. It's really about, I think, how he's able to portray himself and how he gets portrayed to voters.
May I add something there?
Oh, sure.
You know, when I say far left, I guess I should clarify. I did not mean relative to Hillary Clinton. I think they are. I agree. They're very close. The problem is that, you know, Democratic Party activists of both stripes are to the left of most voters, just as Republican activists are to the right of most voters. And so the dilemma when you have an election like this is always, how extreme am I willing to sound in the primary to get my core voters in my own party, and then how non-extreme can I then sound later when the general election rolls around, and I'm not sort of advertising myself to that same core group of committed people. So it's not that Obama's extreme left, it's that in fighting with Hillary so long, he's had to keep defining himself as a good Democrat, and that basically gives him a liberal aura going into the general election. McCain, because he hasn't had that serious competition for a long time, and is able to enter with a bit more of a clean slate to appeal to those middle ground voters, and that's going to be an advantage for him.
Yeah, and yet when you look at what the issues are, there are such clear differences between the two parties, certainly on the war, on tax cuts, on health care. McCain has moved toward examining global warming, but there is a substantial difference between the parties, don't you think?
If you're asking me, yes, absolutely, and there always is. That's been true for several decades, and you know, the poor average voter is always stuck between, you know, choosing between somebody they think's way too liberal for them and somebody they think's way too conservative for them.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, which way do they break? Leaving aside whatever's going on at the time, usually they break toward the candidate who's most been able to seize that middle ground in their messages and in their policy positions.
Well, that's true sometimes. I think in certain elections that's the case, and others it's not so much. I think, you know, right, I mean, you know, voters aren't in a static position in terms of left or right. I mean, if you look at, you know, Bill Clinton's elections, I mean, he, you know, ran as a Democratic Leadership Council Democrat, and I think it's true that he ran to the center and was able to draw on a lot of Republican positions that helped him win two elections and helped kind of take the wind out of the sails of a conservative politics. But I think now it's an interesting election because Republican conservatism has been discredited in part because of Bush in the last couple of years. And so I think McCain is stuck between wanting to appeal to independents on the one hand, but needing to shore up a conservative base on the other. I mean, I think that's why he was chosen over more conservative possible candidates coming in. So in some ways, he looks a little bit like Jimmy Carter did in the 1980 election, or even 76. He needs to try to break with the old party, but he doesn't have a lot of warrant to reach across into Democratic camps. I mean, independents favor Democrats over Republicans on most issues right now. So I think it, in those ways, it's a complicated issue. I think Professor Voss is right. Both candidates are going to have to reach to the center, but they will do so in different ways. And I think it's right now Democrats have a little bit more credibility in claiming that space in kind of a way that Reagan did in 80, I think.
Mm-hmm. How ominous a sign is this that Democrats have won the last three special elections in traditionally strong Republican areas, including the most recent one in Mississippi, of all places, with Travis Childers, who's a conservative Democrat, but Republicans are getting a little bit worried about all of this. Professor Voss?
Oh, yeah, they certainly should, and those losses are a sign of where voters sit. So, you know, I agree completely that if there's any election where a Democrat who's not from the South could take the presidency, keep in mind that hasn't happened for a generation. If there's any election where the Democrats are coming into it so strong that either a Barack Obama or a Hillary Clinton could win, it's definitely under these conditions.
Mm-hmm. Wait, and what you've written about race and the Southern origins of modern conservatism, is the South going to be somewhat different, do you think, this year, Professor Lowndes?
Well, I think what will make, I mean, the South has mostly, certainly white Southerners had a mostly realigned Republican over the last generation, as Professor Voss implied. I think, you know, it's a little bit more open now. I feel like the territory is a bit more open, but partly here, and it's clearly the case in Mississippi, that it was the great mobilization of black voters that was decisive. Although, you know, the Mississippi special election happened in one of the whitest counties in Mississippi. Blacks are 25% of the population, voting population there. So it's, I do think the South is more open, but it seems to me that what these special elections have signaled is a little bit of a crisis of leadership at the top. I think it's a national problem for Republicans more than it is a Southern problem right now.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome poll calls for both our guests. Primaries tomorrow in Oregon and also in Kentucky. And our guests are from those states. Professor Joseph Lowndes, assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of Oregon and author of From the New Deal to the New Right, Race and the Southern Origins of Modern Conservatism. Professor Stephen Voss is associate professor, director of undergraduate studies at the University of Kentucky. We welcome your phone calls if you'd like to look at these primaries, if you want to talk about appeasement, if you want to talk about the special elections, how the campaigns are being run in Oregon and in Kentucky, whether or not Senator Obama can clinch the deal tomorrow night, and whatever else you'd like to bring up. Here's our number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. And if you'd like to send an email, that address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now for our guests, Professor Stephen Voss, Associate Professor, Director of Undergraduate Studies at the University of Kentucky, Professor Joseph Lowndes, who is Assistant Professor, Department of Political Science at the University of Oregon. And we start with Charles from La Crosse. Hi, Charles.
Good morning. Yes. A week ago last Sunday, there was a talking head program where someone suggested that Colin Powell be a VP for McCain. And I thought, you know, that's maybe, you know, a casual calculation. Then this last Sunday on Tim Russert's program for the defeated senatorial candidate from Tennessee, I believe, suggested that Powell may be a vice presidential candidate for Obama. So I thought maybe your author on the race could address that, since this seems to be getting some inertia. I'll take my off the radio.
Okay, thanks, Professor Lowndes.
Yeah, that's interesting. I had not heard that. I think it would surprise me if Obama were to choose Colin Powell for a couple of reasons. One, I think he really needs to run, or I think consciously wants to run against the Bush administration and Bush foreign policy. And while Powell finally seems to have distanced himself from that, he is linked to getting the U.S. into Iraq on the front end, and I think it would be tough for Obama to be able to clearly and forcefully reject Bush policies for the last 8 years and have Powell on the ticket. In terms of the race question, I think as we see in Kentucky and many places, race will play a role in this election, and I'm not sure Obama would want to. I mean, he and Colin Powell are both. Don't have Black American parents. Don't come from, you know, a history of American slavery. Powell's parents were Jamaican, and Obama's obviously his dad was Kenyan. But I think in either of the cases, these are both beloved men in American politics. Powell even more in some ways. But I think it would having two Black men on the ticket as president and vice president might be. I would imagine the Obama camp would calculate that might be a little bit much for many American voters.
Too much change, huh?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Professor Voss.
Oh yeah. I'd bet real money that there's going to be a white guy, or if not, at least a white woman added to Obama's ticket.
Mm-hmm.
To have two people who are perceived as Black would destroy the campaign.
Hmm. And what about the role of race in Kentucky? What role will it play tomorrow?
With all respect to Professor Lowndes, I don't think race is going to matter very much. And the reason, not in the sense that it's not important, but in the sense that Obama's race won't matter much. And the reason is that most of the folks in Kentucky and in the southern states who are going to be bothered by a Black candidate already have an image of the Democratic Party as the minority party, and they were extremely unlikely to vote for the Democrats anyway.
Mm-hmm.
While I think race is critically important in these societies and they shape a lot of the political behavior, I don't think it's really going to change the voting that this candidate happens to have darker skin.
Mm-hmm. Cliff is next from Appleton. Hi, Cliff.
Good morning. Yeah, I just felt it was a little disingenuous to discount race in West Virginia and Kentucky. I used to live in West Virginia. The only state I've been walking down the road and people passed by and yelled out, "Jigaboo," and I think it's no mistake that Hillary Clinton talked about hardworking Americans, white Americans. which I'm insulted by. I think that there's pervasive racism across this country, but particularly in West Virginia and Kentucky. And when you say Hillary Clinton won the working class vote, a lot of those people, in my opinion, were rednecks.
Professor Voss.
Oh, well, no, I mean, I don't disagree that that race influences a lot of the political views of the white working class. And there have been lots of regrettable incidents that get reported in both eastern Kentucky and western, West Virginia, about racial troubles. I don't mean to diminish that. In fact, it's common for some of these white lunch pail Democrats that I was referring to, if they're older, to talk about the good old days back when it was Truman and the Democratic Party hadn't left them, and they very much do mean before the Democratic Party took a more racially liberal stance. So I don't disagree with you with the caller, but I don't think that really changes the nature of Clinton's support, that partly it is an economic thing rather than a racial thing.
Professor Lanz?
Well, I think Professor Voss might be right in this primary where you have self-identified Democratic primary voters. In the general election, I think this group of, Nixon called them silent majority. They became Reagan Democrats. Now they are being called lunch pail Democrats. But I think these are white working class people for whom Democrats have not gotten the majority of votes since 1964, since Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act. But I think that this is a group that's open to, I think we are now at the end of a long Reagan era in certain respects, and I think this is a group that might be open to kind of re-identification with the Democratic Party, depending on what happens. And so, the question in the general election is, will race matter? And I think yes, it will, because I think these might be Democratic voters, or they might go for McCain, or they might sit home, depending on how they perceive racial issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in places like Kentucky and West Virginia are particularly intense. But as the caller said, there's racism all over. But that doesn't mean necessarily that voters will always white voters will always vote their race. I think it's an open moment politically. And partly I just want to say here that there's ways in which race gets coded. I think in talking about Obama, about his elitism, his Harvard elitism, his even eating arugula or this kind of thing, is, even that it seems kind of contradictory, but there's a way in which that also is a way of identifying him not with the white working class. I mean, George Wallace uses language all the time about how black folks are tied to liberal elites, and that's the coalition that's holding down, hardworking, regular white folks. And I think that Clinton, I mean, we don't even need to go to the voters. Clinton herself has used this discourse. Clinton herself is now,
right,
as the caller said. So it's right out there, I think.
We have lines open. If you'd like to join the conversation, please grab a line. It's All Things Political for this Monday, with primaries tomorrow in Oregon and also in Kentucky, and a lot going on in the political race for the presidency. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. And if you'd like to send an email, then do that at talk@wpr.org. Our guest from the University of Oregon, Professor Joseph Lowndes, Assistant Professor, Department of Political Science, author of From the New Deal to the New Right, Race and Southern Origins of Modern Conservatism, and Professor Stephen Voss, Associate Professor, Director of Undergraduate Studies at the University of Kentucky. Professor Lowndes, how many people have already voted in Oregon, and how did you come up with that system of let's vote by mail?
Well, the early voting has been strong here, as it has been in Kentucky. But here, it's of course people mail in their ballots, and so it's you can really get ahead of the game here. So there's been a lot of early voting and a lot of kind of new voters brought into the system, and a lot of young voters who are registered Democrats in extraordinary numbers, which I think is also giving Obama a boost. Is this new youth vote? The question about vote by mail, it happened before I got here. It's about 10 years old.
Hmm.
It's the first one in the country. Now Washington does it as well. Other states are doing it with some elections, but not entirely as it's done here. I think, it's a it's a result of Oregon's kind of reform spirit, I think, in elections and other things. The hope was you would get higher turnouts and more participation by streamlining the system and making it so that people could, choose their candidates and mull these things over in their own living rooms, as opposed to having to get out to the polls early morning or after work.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, it's actually been a fairly smooth system. There might actually be a few glitches this time around, but.
Yeah. So nobody goes to the polls? Everybody votes by mail?
Everybody votes by mail.
Huh.
I mean, you can, if you are like me and are late getting their ballot in, you can go drop it off on election day.
Oh.
But it's not, you don't go, there's not voting booths and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Professor Voss, we don't live in Kentucky, so we haven't seen the ads that have been running. Mention has been made in the press over the weekend that Senator Clinton has run ads attacking the Washington pundits, saying that, they declared her out of the race, and strategists are saying that that worked for her in West Virginia. More people may have gone to the polls simply because of media backlash. What do you think? Are those the ads that are running in Kentucky or not?
Well, I don't have a good sense of the overall ad buy. I'm only seeing what I'm seeing here in Lexington, which
mm-hmm.
is a fairly urban area with a big media market. But Professor Lowndes and I keep telling you the importance of these cultural things that the Democrats have as an issue, and that the different Democratic candidates have an issue. And I think that when you're running in West Virginia and Kentucky, attacking the Washington pundits and the pointy-headed liberals that George Wallace insulted is in and of itself a good good message that has resonance.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know about their overall ad buy. I can't tell you that.
Okay, let's go to some more phone calls. Leonard from Milwaukee is next. Hi, Leonard. Hi, Leonard. Are you there? We got you on the air. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to say that me personally, I believe that it's like a conundrum of understanding here. I don't necessarily believe it's just about racism that keeps the so-called white male voters, if they would like to clump them together. I believe that's another political spin that has been thought out there. I believe that.
Whoa, wow. Kind of,
can you turn down the radio, please, Leonard? Leonard? Are you there, Leonard? All right, did you get enough of that gentleman to know where he was going?
I did.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Lowndes?
Professor Voss, go ahead.
There's been a lot of research on how race affects white voters. I've done, in fact, a fair bit of that. And there are little, there are little pointers we can get from that scientific research that'll help us figure out what's going to happen here. I alluded to some of the research earlier when I said that having a black candidate per se doesn't really make that much of a difference. For example, I analyzed back when you had in the mid '90s when you had black congressional candidates running in majority white districts that they had inherited because of Supreme Court cases, and what the evidence showed is that while these black Democrats did not do well with white voters in the South, neither did the white Democrats. It's basically the Democrats do badly with white voters in the South. Having the additional, fact of there being a black candidate really didn't make much difference to how voters behaved. Another thing we know is that when white voters see a black candidate, they bring some stereotypes forward. And these may not be the stereotypes you think. They're not the sort of racist stereotypes that we know about that we've inherited from history of slavery and then Jim Crow segregation. They're really more assumptions about black politicians are going to be very liberal, and they're going to tend to be interested in minority concerns rather than general concerns that everybody shares. So that's sort of the backdrop in which Obama would be running, and it will be a challenge for him. But since he's going to be in a very well-funded presidential campaign, if there's any black candidate who can get past these initial stereotypes, it's going to be him.
Mm-hmm. Professor Lowndes?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it's certainly the case, when Jesse Jackson ran in the 80s, I mean, he You know, he really spent a lot of time in Appalachia and other places and tried to make kind of economically populist appeals that were meant to transcend race, and it didn't really matter at all to white voters. But another thing I want to say about what the caller said, which I think was very interesting, and I think he's absolutely right, was that there's this clumping together of a group that we call white working class voters is itself a political strategy. It's not just an empirical fact. If you look back to the way this group was begun to be talked about, it's really in the Nixon campaign. Kevin Phillips starts sending these memos to Nixon in the 68 campaign saying, you know, start talking about these people as the forgotten majority, as the forgotten Americans. And then, you know, Nixon starts using the language of a silent majority and then a new majority. But really what he's attempting to do is signal that white Democratic voters should understand themselves in racial terms, not just in class terms. And that by understanding themselves in racial and not just class terms, you split their loyalties or potentially move them into a Republican camp. Mm-hmm. And so I think by the time you get to the 90s, people begin talking about this group as if it's a self-evident demographic. But really, it really began, as a caller said, actually as a political strategy. And so it is important, I think, that he also says that we're careful about how we stereotype white workers as much as we stereotype black voters. Yeah.
Well, he also has this slightly different narrative in that his mother and his grandparents were white working class people, right? He's black and he's white.
Yes. Yeah, what he did in the famous speech in Philadelphia after the Jeremiah Wright controversy broke was to kind of map his own genetic heritage onto the national body politic in a way. And it's interesting to see what he does there. In his 2004 Democratic National Convention speech, he talks about how the New Deal and the FHA, how it helped his white grandparents in Kansas. Mm-hmm. But then what he does in this Philadelphia speech is to talk about the way that the New Deal and the FHA in particular excluded black potential home buyers and for loans and that kind of thing. So I think he's trying to keep those things together in kind of an interesting way, but I think he's able to do so in part by telling a story about himself. It's about his own story, but it's also about the way he tells a story, which he wants to embrace mm-hmm. both sides of that, I think.
Yeah.
That's right.
And heavens knows he knows how to tell a story.
That's for sure.
That's for sure.
You know, we tend to treat voters as dumber than they really are. When the journalists write about elections, they tend to emphasize things like character and Dukakis's eyebrows and these frivolous things, and that's really unfair to voters. Voters are usually trying to use a small amount of information to make the best decision they can, and one of the things they look for when they are looking at character is when this person reaches a crisis later or when they have to make hard choices, what are the odds they're going to make it roughly the way I would make it if I were sitting in the chair? And the fact that he shares certain background traits, that he has some of this history with the white working class, may give him the leverage to build himself up as someone who would make decisions roughly the way they would in the future.
Right. Who's got the train in the background?
That's me, sorry.
Oh, no, it's fine. That's kind of a nice sound. Let's go to Ed from Wausau. Hi, Ed.
Hi. I was just talking to my aunt this last weekend, who's been in Florida for too long, 30 years. But she admitted to me, she's like 80 and I'm 65, but she admitted to me she's prejudiced. And that's one of the things that, puts her where she is. But on C-SPAN, during the West Virginia, I guess the state Republican Party was doing the swift voting of Obama with the ads using Reverend Wright. I guess the National Party tried to keep them from doing that, but they did do that. And also, I wonder if there's any effect. I was wondering what the effect was of, I guess, Rush Limbaugh's had a campaign to convince Republicans to switch over and vote as Democrats for Hillary. But if you could comment on those two.
Okay. Thanks, Ed. Professor Lowndes, you want to start?
Yeah, let me start with the latter one first. I think a lot has been made about this this idea of getting Republicans to switch over and register Democratic and vote for Clinton. I think that takes it takes a lot of effort and time, even for people to get to the polls and vote once. And to register at all takes a lot of time and energy. And the idea of getting large numbers of people, enough to make it matter, the thousands of people necessary to do that, I think is unlikely. I did before. I was a political science professor. I worked in a democracy reform organization that looked at election and election fraud a lot. And I think that kind of thing just rarely happens. There's not evidence of that, of those kind of concerted mass efforts. In terms of the first question about the swift voting of Obama through the use of Reverend Wright, I wonder if I was really surprised. It was interesting to see how pundits spoke about Jeremiah Wright the first time he came out. Everybody said this is going to sink Obama, or this is going to be really, you know. And then it turned out that it did not seem to hurt him terribly in the polls in Pennsylvania, although you can't entirely trust how people respond to polls, but it didn't do the damage that people thought it did. And then, as if to test that very proposition, Jeremiah Wright comes out again and says, in case you didn't understand me, here's my position.
Really?
And, you know, that also, then people thought for sure this was going to really do it to Obama, and it seemed to also not have as much, it certainly had effects and will have lingering effects, but they weren't quite as strong as I think most journalists, opponents, and even political scientists, I think, thought that it would be. And it makes me wonder, in a way, I don't think, and people don't want to let Wright off the hook or Obama off the hook for his connection to him, but I'm not sure that, the question is, are these the sentiments that animate voters right now? And I think, you know, during the 80s, there was a lot of issues of crime, issues of welfare, issues of affirmative action, which Republicans stoked and Democrats began stoking too. DLC Democrats really had a lot of play in the electorate. And certainly we all, with the Willie Horton ad from the first George Bush's campaign is an example of this. But it makes me wonder how much Wright will end up mattering. And I'm not sure that it will matter as much as people have assumed it has, in part because I'm not sure that race is the central concern to voters in a way that it was in the immediate post-Civil Rights era.
Well, that's a good question. Let's ask that of Professor Voss. What do you think animates voters now?
Well, I don't think there really been that many changes over the last couple of generations. The number one things that voters respond to are the conditions they see in their communities. What we have a little term for it is jargon, retrospective voting. But what it means is they sort of look back at what they've experienced over the last 2 to 4 years. And if they feel like things are getting better, they tend to vote for the party that's in power. And if things are getting worse, they tend to vote against them. Economics is the most powerful. When you have a foreign policy engagement like this, foreign policy can creep in and mess around with that calculus. I really don't think that's any different. What changes is the details. In other words, what sort of crisis is bothering them and who does it bother? You know, today we have one that hasn't been around again in almost a political generation, which is these gas prices.
Yes.
And the inflation that's starting to result in the price of little things like noodles or cans of vegetables.
Right.
And you know, I think that that's going to be motivating people now, same way it was motivating them back in the late 70s and early 80s.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to add to that or detract from it, Professor Lanz?
Well, I think that Professor Voss is right. The question is how people understand and interpret their conditions, which I think can differ. I mean, you know, each party has what their role is to interpret and frame for voters how they're experiencing their conditions and what are the causes of it. And so, you know, at certain moments in political history, you know, FDR was able to lay the depression at the at the feet of conservative Republicans and Herbert Hoover in particular. Reagan by 1980 was able to point to the myriad economic problems and say, look, this is the legacy of democratic liberalism, and convince voters that their interests therefore were Republican interests. So I do think that it's not simply how people understand their what their conditions are, but how they interpret those conditions, and that's a question of language and a question of how people understand the world around them, which I think is not just to simply empirical. It's about interpretation.
All Things Political this Monday at 9. Our guests are Professor Joseph Lanz, Assistant Professor, Department of Political Science at the University of Oregon, author of From the New Deal to the New Right, Race and Southern Origins of Modern Conservatism. Professor Stephen Voss is Associate Professor and Director of Undergraduate Studies at the University of Kentucky. Both Oregon and Kentucky, as you well know, are having their primaries tomorrow. I'm Kathleen Dunn. More phone calls in a moment. One line is open at 800-486-8655. 877-227-2050 for those of you who are in Milwaukee. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go back to phone calls to Julie from Milwaukee. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I just had a comment. I have lived in Oregon, different parts, both in Portland and also more rural areas. And I just was kind of curious when the colleges actually got out of, were let out for school and what possible role that might play in some of the large numbers. And just also to comment that Portland is very, very different from either coastal or eastern Oregon, and what either the professors might think about those issues. And I just also wanted to say that I think that with all the discussion about Obama and, you know, race and that kind of thing, I don't think it's any small thing that, you know, if Hillary Clinton was able to win over and get support from this sort of working class male voting population, that is no small thing. You know, people may be concerned about race, but I'll tell you, white working class men are scared to death of successful, powerful women. So I just also wanted to know what the professors thought about those issues, and I will just hang up and listen.
Okay, thanks for the call. Let's start with you, Professor Voss.
Okay, you know, the fact that Oregon's got that variation, and Kentucky does too, you know, we have a large number of schools and universities in Lexington, and in fact, I think there was a recent survey that showed we have as many educated people here as they have in Madison, Wisconsin, and we're in the top 20 in the country. You know, within these so-called red state areas to which we apply certain stereotypes, there's a very large blue state component. And the same, you know, is true in these blue states like Oregon. There's still going to be very large areas and large number of voters who are not all that different in their behavior from the folks who give Kentucky their dominant tone. And we tend to, you know, we were talking about stereotyping these lunch pail Democrats, these sorts of voters. We tend to stereotype regions and states as well, and it's good that the caller who's been to Oregon can attest to the type of variation you see there. In terms of the sort of strong professional woman thing, you know, if Hillary Clinton were running against one of these sort of older white male politicians that we always get served up, it's possible that the sexism that exists out there in the population would matter more. But I do think that, you know, with a very young minority candidate running, Hillary Clinton's been able to avoid most of the pain that would have brought her in this campaign.
Mm-hmm. It looks as though it's going to be Senator Obama. It certainly looked not that long ago that she was going to be the nominee, Professor Lowndes. What happened?
Well, I want to say a couple things about the last caller quickly. Just to answer her questions, at least the University of Oregon, which is on a quarter system, won't be out for a couple more weeks.
Okay.
So I don't know what that means. The other thing is that she is right that it's the I-5 corridor, which is really the strong liberal part of the state, although that's been changing. In the last 5 years, Bend has grown dramatically, which is a city in eastern Oregon. Hood River has also grown dramatically. And these become urban centers that are more likely to trend Democratic. And in the long term, this has kind of given the state legislature to the Democrats and the governor's office, and it seemed to be growing Democratic trends, although this is a very purple state in some ways. So I think that she's right to bring up that there's quite a lot of variation. The trends seem to be going in one direction at the moment. I think with Clinton, you know, one thing to remember about her, I lived in New York when she ran for the Senate there, and she's an extraordinary campaigner and did. Everybody thought, he called her a carpetbagger, said for sure she was going to lose, and it was a joke that she was even running in some ways. And she really made her most loyal supporters out of upstate, rural, and economically depressed cities in upstate New York, Buffalo and the Finger Lakes region. And she did so by really showing an ability to listen to those concerns of economically depressed voters and people who have rural issues. And she is a very formidable candidate. And I think it's shown that in this race, even, you know, the fact that she's gotten as far as she has. I think there is a lot of sexism in the campaign. If you look at most political cartoons which feature her, show her as a shrill woman, as kind of a scary maternal figure, and yet she's been able to win over a lot of voters. I think the caller's right that that's no small thing, that she has done something extraordinary, which I think even though she will probably lose the nomination, although it's not entirely clear yet, historic changes have actually been wrought in the landscape, I think, by now.
She sure is a worker, isn't she? Oh, my gosh, does she campaign?
Yes, yeah, night and day. She's like a machine.
Yeah. Rich from Appleton is next. Hi, Rich.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Just a question. I was on the Internet probably about a week or so ago, and I cannot remember the site, to be honest with you. But one of them kind of tied the Clintons to the early stages of Walmart. And with the job loss situation in this country right now probably being one of the big factors, I'm wondering if that got out, do you think that would hurt Hillary's chances of getting the nomination?
Professor Voss.
I can't say that I have an informed opinion on that, and I'd feel guilty starting to blather about it. So I'm going to admit ignorance on this one.
Professor Lowndes.
Yeah, me too. Although I would say that I think with I think at this point Clinton has been able to successfully frame herself as kind of a, you know, as an anti-globalization liberal in some ways, in a way that was not true when the Clintons ran or Bill Clinton ran in the 90s. He was, you know, he was the spearhead of NAFTA and other multilateral trade agreements, and Clinton has successfully distanced herself from the kind of policies what we might call general international Walmart kind of policy. So I think that she is probably fairly safe in those regards.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call, Rich. We go next to Brad from Eau Claire. Hi, Brad.
Hi there.
Hi.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the extended campaign, the primary season here. A number of pundits and bloggers have talked about how this could possibly hurt the Democrats, and I don't completely buy that argument. Talking about Hillary's role in picking up these once-failed Democrats and showing her strong support here in the most recent election. Is there a chance that this can really draw the silent majority back into the Democrats in the fall? And do you think that Hillary would be willing to help Senator Obama secure this part of the electorate, even if she wasn't as a VP candidate?
Professor Voss?
I'm sorry, that question was very low volume. Could you
Would she be willing to work to secure the voters that have gone to her, those lunch pail Democrats, should she not be the nominee?
Well, I'm sure that already with the economic policies he's announced that, as he advertised to them, they'd be able to compare them to what the Republicans and McCain are offering. And for a lot of these Democrats, the tax cut, low budget approach to government is not appealing, and their economic views will pull them one way, and as often happens to them, their cultural views will often pull them in the other direction, and usually what determines which way they go is how badly they're feeling that pinch of the pocketbook, and how bad their communities are feeling that pinch because of the economic troubles. And if these, if these gas prices keep rising, and if food prices start following them, and other goods, I think that Obama will find very fertile ground for spreading that kind of economic populist message.
Mm-hmm. What's the significance? And I don't know if this is completely true, but I've been hearing that Senator Obama plans to spend tomorrow night in Iowa, of all places. What does that mean?
Who are you asking? I'm sorry.
Either one, whoever wants. I want to have both of you respond. Professor Voss, go ahead.
Oh, well, I think he's trying to reinforce the message that, that the media have been giving out and that his campaign advisors have been giving out, that he's already won and it's time to start fighting McCain. And by going back to a state that's already settled and the one that kicked off his strong run, I think he's just trying to put the final punctuation at the end of the primary and start fighting McCain.
Mm-hmm. And is tomorrow decisive in that regard in terms of pledged delegates, Professor Lowndes?
Well, it's decisive in terms of pledged delegates. It's not entirely. We have to see what happens with the kind of continuing messes of Florida and Michigan. But I think it's fairly safe to say that this cinches it for pledged delegates. Although, the most recent news I have read is that Obama's going to be careful about declaring victory and may not do that tomorrow night. I think that he wants to make sure that he is not seen as being presumptuous at this point, and you know, around kind of issues that are still left. So I think, you know, by going to Iowa, he can kind of give a speech from there and not have to say anything. Just being in Iowa kind of makes the statement without him having to push it hard himself. So maybe that's what he'll do.
Mm-hmm. It is, when you think about it, a pretty remarkable story, isn't it? The whole campaign is, people will be writing about this for a long time.
No doubt. No doubt, in so many ways. And, mm-hmm. and it may actually, you know, the political landscape may have been altered as a result of the kind of complicated gender and race politics that have played out here, as well as kind of, you know, in the context of a somewhat discredited, you know, you got a sitting president who has some of the worst poll ratings ever, and a war and an economic mm-hmm. crisis. So I think it's the interplay of these things that actually make it quite interesting and may show us some party realignment going on. I mean, one person we've not talked about here so much is McCain, and I do think it's quite interesting that McCain has a lot of work to do to try to both mm-hmm. keep independence and also keep a conservative base, and that's not an attractive position for any candidate to be in.
Yeah, well, we'll get to all of that in a little while. Thanks very much to both of our guests, Professor Joseph Lowndes from the University of Oregon and Professor Stephen Voss, who is from the University of Kentucky. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, and to Rhonda Fanning as well for on-air production. We will have special NPR coverage of these primaries tomorrow night. News ahead.